Hey, wonderfuls, welcome to episode 451 of the JV Club with my wonderful guest, Danny Green. She is one of the two lead singers of the wonderful Nashville-based band, Bird Talker. I hope very much that you will enjoy this episode. I hope everyone is staying well and hopefully leaning into finding some harmony in this current state of affairs. That's sort of what I wish for us all at this point. Enjoy the episode, and I'll talk to you next week. How are you? How was your tour? Are you in between stuff or did you finish your tour?
We're home.
You're home, home.
We're home now. And the only thing on our horizon right now is to play a show in Nashville next week.
Nice. And where are you? Well, I guess I should say, where is home in case I'm wrong?
Yeah, we are all in Nashville.
You are in Nashville. Okay.
Currently. Yeah. So it's really nice to wrap up a tour with a hometown.
Oh, sure.
And, like, have friends and family out and just blow it out one last time. So,
and you guys were, I mean, it was not an insignificant amount of places that you were, because I feel like you've been on tour for a while. How was it? Was it your first time getting back out into it, like amidst, you know, the craziness of COVID and all this in the last couple years?
Yeah, it was. Zach and I did an opening tour in 2019. So we, as a band, didn't tour much in 2019 at all, and absolutely zero in 2020, because we just kind of hunkered down and made our record. So yeah, it was the first time getting back out. And leading up to the tour, we had a lot more like nerves. We had nerves about COVID and just wondering how it was going to go down and if people would buy tickets and would we get sick. And
but all very normal to sort of go,
strange times to tour in. But oddly, was very smooth, and we had people come out to the shows, and yeah, it was super refreshing, I think, to get out and do it again. And I feel normal.
The emotion of, I mean, I've done a handful of live shows and then just some Comic-Con appearances and panels and stuff. And it can be very emotional. Like the feeling of that wave of everyone being in a place for the same reason and feeling like kind of, because for me, I've said this before on the podcast recently, but I just didn't have, I feel like I'm adaptive enough that I will just forget to miss something consciously. And so I'll be like, I don't know, listen, it hasn't been that bad. And then when the thing is reintroduced, that's when you're like, Oh, wow. I'm having a lot more feels than I thought I was going to have walking out on the stage. Very emotional. Did you have that experience?
Yeah, that happened a lot. I don't think I thought about that going into it. Kind of like you're saying, I didn't have like an awareness of how that would hit me. But
yeah,
there were definitely nights that I was just completely overwhelmed by the fact that we were all there and just by like music.
Yes.
And like, what a cool thing that we're doing this.
God, no,
all we do is make up songs and record them. And now we're like at this event where we're all sharing this together. It's just, it's like a lot to wrap your head around. It's funny.
It's a
so
lot
simple,
to wrap your head around. Yeah.
But it's such a like connective experience.
Absolutely. Yeah. Has that been like growing up for you? Was that a place where, because that certainly was true for me, like music was very much a connective tissue in between, not just between friendships, but like, you know, in the times when I felt I didn't feel like anywhere else, anything else could access me or that I could feel known by a person, like music more so even than, you know, books, I think were, was that place was like, oh, okay, this is a safe haven, you know, and to have those sense memories that go along with certain pieces of music or bands or things that you listen to over and over and over again at different points in your life, like the nostalgia. I hesitate to use that word because I feel like, I don't know, I feel like that's an overused word for like people who, you know, want to go to 50s diners, but like, you know, the feeling of or wishing that you were back in those times. And that's not what that is for me. I don't know if that's true for you, but for me, it's I would never go back.
I don't want to
feel such a tenderness for those times and those feelings. And I like being able to touch base with him and not be in them anymore, but like let that feeling wash over me, you know?
Yeah, but the feeling lives on. I think that's what's so amazing about music is that it becomes this like portal to a whole like emotional
portal.
Landscape.
Absolutely.
You know? I feel like I've learned how to feel certain feelings because I heard a specific song.
Yeah.
And it made me have that feeling. And then it showed me like, oh, that's the feeling. It helped me tap into it because it's like this, it's this little package of like an emotional experience.
Absolutely.
Then, yeah, that gets to live forever, you know?
Absolutely. Did you have, I mean, I guess I, now I'm like already leaning into just the most cliched questions to ask a musician, but I mean, there are, for some people it's Bob Dylan, for some people it's Joni Mitchell, for some people it's Aretha Franklin, for some people it's Stevie Wonder. Like, were there particular musicians that you really felt like lyrically you had that kind of, oh my God, this is it. You just said, you know, 2 years of feelings that I couldn't articulate and put it into one stanza. Did you have that as a teenager, like, for example?
Yeah. I'll have to think back to like what I was listening to in my teenage years. But yeah, I mean, the first things that came to mind, my dad's a huge Patty Griffin fan. And so we grew up listening to her records. And so I think as like a songwriter, she was.
Wow. She's a class act.
She's so. Yeah. Oh, she's so powerful and like deep and clear. And I think hearing like a very steady, strong female voice be very introspective and kind of fearless and feeling all these feelings. She was a real like safe space, I guess, or she kind of gave me something to latch on to. She was a big one. And then in teenage years I was very much listening to like I loved John Mayer.
Okay.
And
sure,
like rap music.
Yeah. Awesome.
Like I was hopping around town with my friends and listening to rap and just like going hard,
feeling it. Where were you a teenager?
In Nashville. I grew
in Nashville.
Up here.
Oh yeah. Nice. Okay. That's one of those cities where like LA, my default is to assume that people aren't from there. Right. And I'm often wrong.
Yeah.
Like, why have I not learned that many people grow up in cities or New York? No, New York is fair. New York is like, you assume people didn't grow up in Manhattan and you're almost always right. You know, but like people who live, but Nashville and LA, there's a sense of it being a place that people migrate to, which is certainly true as well. But like so often I assume that and people are like, no, I was born and raised here. I'm like, okay, I don't, why would I, why would I have to assume that?
Yeah, I don't meet a lot of people who that's the same for, but that's where I grew up. My dad and mom are from upstate New York, and that's where they met, got married, and my dad wanted to write songs, so he moved the family down here. And
okay, so you are like second gen passion for music.
Yeah, that's what my dad wanted to do. So I grew up with that being his job, which was like a weird thing when I was a kid because he didn't make money. And so he like wrote songs during the day and delivered pizzas at night. And so now knowing that, like, it's amazing that he was so committed to like his love and making this dream come alive.
Yeah.
But at the time, I was like, thought that was a really weird thing. I didn't know anybody else whose dad had that job, and I was like, I have a weird family, you know. But I grew up with music in the house.
Did he how much was he able to share that with the world? Like, I know he wasn't making money, but did he get a chance to like
it took about 13 years from when he started till he got a number one with Sarah Evans. I think that was his first one. So he's had some success as a writer and like has a really thriving career now. But
oh, great.
Yeah, he really was grinding it out there at the beginning.
Which is a good, I mean, that's such a different experience of like, I feel like being the child of somebody who is successful, especially in the arts, so frequently people wait to have kids until like they're in their career and they sort of, you know what I mean? Like, Tom Hanks had his second kid. I'm using that as an example because I'm trying to remember when Colin, his son, did the podcast. Like he was very much in his mom's world in the Bay Area, and he would visit his dad on set. But for sure, there's an example of somebody who, you know, a lot of your early memories are of like your dad getting paid good money to like do these artistic things. But for somebody like you, having the experience of seeing the arc of it on a much different, more diverse level of like, no, I've seen him delivering pizzas and I saw him get that number one. Yeah. What an interesting and I would assume helpful, if not scary, thing for you to know going in, right? Mm-hmm. As a musician yourself.
Yeah. And it's funny because there were like jokes in the house growing up about how we should not be musicians and we should have real jobs, you know, like he was very self-deprecating about his choices. And like that did sink in. Like I didn't think that I was going to have a creative career, a career in music. I didn't know which way I was going, but I didn't see it as like a really viable option. So yeah, when I got married to Zach, my husband, and we started writing songs, I do think the fact that I watched my dad work so long kind of allowed me to settle into those beginning stages, you know, and I assumed that it was going to be a slow burn. And in the grand scheme of things, it has not been that. It's actually moved really quickly. But yeah, I think it gave me a sense of like, he wanted to be a farmer. So I feel like they turned out to be really similar careers.
Oh, great.
Writing songs and creating music.
Yeah.
It's like you cultivate the crop and you do what you can. And then you sort of just like try to sell it and see if people want it. I think that metaphor really like hit home for me too, of like, yeah, you're planting a seed and this is going to take time. But I think I had faith that like it could happen. It might take a while, but something could happen, you know?
Absolutely. No, I absolutely love that metaphor. Going back to you listening to hip hop on the streets of Nashville, which isn't to say, by the way, that there isn't like a robust record, because my understanding is like there's lots of people recording hip hop in Nashville too. Like it's not, which a lot of people don't assume. They assume it's like the country music capital and that's that. But like, that's not true, right?
No. Yeah. We have quite a like broad spectrum of music that, gets recorded here. And so that's a cool thing too. And I think you're right. Something a lot of people don't know about Nashville. Yeah. There is a lot of country music, but there's a lot of other stuff too.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. What was that kind of like your experience of being into that and kind of having that be part of your social infrastructure? What else would that entail? Like John Mayer and hip hop are an amazing combination of things to be super into. I think it speaks to like, I think it speaks to the authenticity of what you were into, quite frankly. Because some people feel like they just need to be into this. Like when you're a teenager, I feel like you're like, who am I? What do I like? Like how defined does that need to be? And how exact and limiting does that need to be? Do I need to be the goth girl? Do I need to be, you know, the kid who's like, if I'm listening to hip hop, like I ain't admitting I'm also listening to John Mayer or whatever. That's maybe not a great example, but but it feels like you liked what you liked.
I liked what I liked and I still have like a really weird palette, I think, in terms of what I can enjoy musically. But and I definitely felt that sense of like not really having an identity or wanting to know what my identity was at that time. But I don't know. I don't think I spent too much time on it because I had my band of buddies and we would just kind of like dance to music that we liked. And it wasn't really it didn't feel like an identity at the time or like anybody needed me to build around that. It was just like, that was something we did together. So we just enjoyed it.
Yeah. What was your high school like? Was it a public school? Was it a private school?
Lordy, lordy. So when dad got the first number one, my parents took us out of public school and put us into a private Christian, like college prep school.
Gotcha.
It's very small. I want to say I had like 70 ish in my graduating class. A really small Christian school, and it was the Church of Christ, which I had no exposure to before.
Which I guess I still don't know what
interesting
beliefs
okay. and
where does that fall in the spectrum of create? I mean, I guess if most Christian, maybe are they teaching creationism?
Absolutely. Creationism.
Sort of like prayer and school.
Atonement
happening.
Theory, like Jesus saved you from your sins. People
I don't mean that. I all due respect because I I feel like I'm fairly open. I mean, I have my issues with Mormonism, but anyway, because I had to go to church as a Mormon. But atonement theory, you've just made it sound so scientific in a way I've never heard. I've never heard that expressed before.
I think that's
I
the
kind
term
of love that.
For,
atonement theory. I mean, I love that. I love that.
Yeah, because that came later. You know, I remember learning about this somewhere. But yeah, that idea that like Jesus was saving people from sins was not like an original Christian idea, kind of came later. And some guy was like, I think this is what it is. And everybody was like, okay. And we sort of latched onto it and went from there. So it is all a theory, which is sort of relieving. It was relieving when I learned that.
That's,
yeah,
I guess
like,
that's,
oh, good.
I guess that is what I'm saying. I am saying that,
that
leaves it open.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
We were working with something.
That's not fact. That's not cold, hard, you know, immutable facts.
Right.
That's
maybe
really interesting.
Work. Yeah.
Yeah. You might find testing it time and time again that it doesn't work
it
for you. Who
work.
Knows? Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what was your friend group make us like? Did you just kind of said you had your kind of inner circle, you had your buddies. Were you a good student? Were you kind of rebellious? Like, were you sampling various and sundry mind altering substances? Mild to, you know, what was that all about?
No, I was really. So it was quite a shock to like move to that environment in like the sixth and seventh grade. So like I really tried to snap into the culture. I think I really tried to like do it right. And like, I feel like I was just going along with all the Church of Christ sort of pomp and circumstance. Like I didn't really get it, but I was just like, okay. And I would just sort of go along with it because everybody else was into it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really tried to play by the rules. I like never smoked or drank or like I was very, it was like a tension, I think, between wanting to be rebellious and then like really wanting to be a part of the group and make sure my parents were proud because they put me in the school and
yeah, I was
all
gonna
that
ask
stuff.
That.
So,
like if you have a mutually respectful relationship with your parents and it was exciting and important for your parents to be able to offer that up to you as like a love language, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Then that's a whole different feeling than you didn't want to go there. They're really strict. They wanted you to go there. You fought about it and you went. Like that's more probably likely the kid that's going to like go, you know, it's like skipping school, like smoking cigarettes and stuff, because there's a tension that's just like lean into versus you trying to kind of hold those things in check because you weren't out to like hurt your parents or, you know, disregard what they were all about. So I totally get that.
And I think I watched them struggle financially and I knew it was a big deal that they were able to give this to us. And
so I tried
to do it right. And I was like a really good student and super invested in that way. And then I went to college and it all sort of after that. But but in high school, I did a really, really good job.
Yeah. What were you? and beyond like hanging with your friends and listening to music and that, were you a big movie buff? Like, were you a TV kid? Were you?
Not really. God, what did I do? I played sports. I was a volleyballer.
Okay.
Which was fun. And tennis for a little bit there at the end. But yeah, I mean, I don't know how to explain it. We were just chillers, you know, like I'd watch comedies with my friends,
you
know, like we would hang out and watch movies, but God, yeah, I just remember dance parties and like going on spring break every year. And yeah, just
where do you go for spring break? If you're a Nashville kid going to Church of Christ,
everybody goes to Destin, Florida.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a mass migration in the springtime.
I just wasn't part of that world. Yeah, it always seemed like I'm going through this thing, and I don't know if you've experienced this at all, where now this is something that I talk about occasionally, but this idea of like trying to ascribe like a lack of coolness or a lack of awareness or appreciation of something that's in pop culture, I now blame on like, oh, I'm just not a kid anymore. Like I'm not cool. I'm an old lady, whatever. Like I sort of dismiss it. But then I have to like back up on myself and go, but you never liked top 40. Like you weren't listening to top 40 music when you know what I mean? Like this is not a thing where suddenly, you know what I'm saying? It's like I'm trying to-
You were never cool is what you're saying.
I was never cool. I'm trying to project back as if like I would have known
like back in the day where I was really tapped in.
Well, I think so. And it's very solipsistic and very like ego based, I think, at its worst. But it is that feeling of like when someone brings up like a YouTube star, or someone brings up like a, you know, very famous pop musician. I won't use Billie Eilish because I feel like she's very much in that category, like Adele, where she sort of crosses all of these different borders. Yeah. But if it were just like straight like pop, I wouldn't. I have to like check myself and go, dude, you didn't know who those people were when you were a teenager. Like people gave you shit then for not knowing what was going on, unless it was like, you know, like The Cure's guitarist left and he and Erasure formed a blah, whatever. Like, you know, so, but it's funny the way you sort of try to like map out your coolness or like your awareness of pop culture. It starts to warp and become something different as you get older. Then you're like, I guess I just don't know what the kids are up to. But it's like, I didn't know what the kids were up to then, unless it was a certain group of kids, you know?
Have I ever really known what's going on?
Have I ever really known what's going on?
I think the answer for me is no. I feel in a lot of ways like I live under a rock. And even now, I'm just such a passive like consumer, I think, of like pop culture and even music sometimes. It's like, I want to like listen to this and engage with it, but I don't like go learn about the artist and like, you know,
fandom hunger of I need to own every one of these. Like, I need to know every single like B-side that came out as a single on Spotify or see every, like, I need to see every one of this director's films because I've decided that it's my favorite director kind of thing. Like a collector, almost like a collector, right? Even if it's not a physical collection, like a collection of knowledge.
Yeah. Not really. Not since NSYNC, I don't think. I think that's the last time I felt that level of like hunger.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is. But it's nice.
NSYNC like probably tied to some hormone stuff too.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Opposed to me being like, at some point I decided I loved Robert Altman movies because I was like one of those kids who's like, I'm into movies that were only made before I was born or whatever. Like you go through that pocket. But that was a different kind of obsession than like the fact that I was like, I'm pretty sure I will either marry Jodie Foster or Steve Martin. Like those are the two people
either one
I'm destined to be with.
Both great choices.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun. You're in a theater. The lights go down. You're about to get swept up by the characters and all their little details and interpersonal dramas. You look at them and think, that person is so obviously in love with their best friend. Wait, am I in love with my best friend? That character's mom is so overbearing. Why doesn't she just stand up to her? Oh God, do I need to stand up to my own mother? If you've ever recognized yourself in a movie, then join me, Jordan Cruciola, for the podcast Feeling Seen. We've talked to author Susan Orlean on realizing her own marriage was falling apart after watching Adaptation, an adaptation of her own work, and comedian Hari Kondabolu on why Harold and Kumar was a depressingly important movie for Southeast Asians. So join me every Thursday for the Feeling Seen podcast here on Maximum Fun. What were your relationships like or your crushes like? Like, who were you sort of falling for? Did that have the same kind of diversity as like your other cultural interests? Or was it like, oh, I always fall for the guy on the motorcycle, or I always fall for like the sweet nerd that I think I can have a thing with, but then I realize we should just be friends, da da da. Like, was there any kind of pattern there?
I do feel like that was a bit broad as well, but I always, like, since Justin, was always in love with the singer and musician and someone who was just so fully like into his music and his feelings. And but Zach, it's funny, Zach's the first musician I actually dated, so I never connected with anybody in that way before that, but that was always where my crushes were. And like dancing was big to me too. If somebody was a good dancer,
I'd be cool.
We should dance.
Yeah. Wait, how tall are you if you're a volleyballer?
I'm 5'5".
Okay, I was just curious.
I'm not tall, but
There's no judgment.
Like
there.
I said, small school, and I played a lot of defense. And I can jump pretty high, so I could hold my own as an outside hitter. But I'm petite.
It's cooler when you're if you're not. if the genetics of it aren't like a natural plus, yeah. like you have to be able to jump higher. And it that's is, pretty cool.
I know. Kind of fun to have to yeah. just work so hard for something.
That's
you know?
Right. That's right. Were you writing music? Were you a writer, like in terms of expressing yourself, like keeping journals or writing poetry or writing songs when you were a teenager?
No, none of that. None of that.
I really felt like I was about to get a different answer.
I know. It's so funny.
You were literally nodding with me the whole time. And then your mouth made the Y sound. And you were like,
no. You're right. I did a perfect fake out.
It was such a fake out.
The nodding is about like how all
I've you're just, following me. You're an I've active listener. I've been thinking about all of this. Listener. Yeah.
Recently, because yeah, all this, my creative self, I was not really in tune with in like high school and even in college. I would let myself, I enjoyed music and I enjoyed like doing art when I had the chance, but I didn't really journal. And I studied English lit in college, so I had to write papers a lot, but they were all like analysis
about something. Yeah, exactly.
I never took a creative writing class. Which is very funny to me when I look back, because now it makes so much sense to me to orient my life around all these things. And now they're the things I want to do every day. Like I journal like crazy and love to write and listen to music and just get into it. But I've had to like work those things into my life now. And I think it goes back to that split I was talking about where I had not entertained the idea of a creative life as the way I was going to go. So these were things that I was just like, I like them, but I should do other things. I should have a other job like this. And
which it sounds like, I mean, your parents' mantra probably did have, again, because, I mean, do you feel like that's, you draw that straight line? Like, I mean, they did joke about don't do this. Don't try to do this for a living.
Yeah.
Even if they thought they were gently joking about it, that like, you don't know how much that creeps into a person's psyche to where they're like, yeah, I guess I don't. I guess I'm not going to do that. You know,
I guess that is a bad idea. Uh-huh. I know. Yeah. Young people. I feel like I took everything so seriously.
Do you have siblings? Did you say?
Yeah, I do. I have two older brothers.
Oh, two older brothers. Okay. Mm-hmm. And are they, do they have those similar creative strains that they weren't doing anything about, or did they?
No, my brother got on the train early. My oldest brother, Randy, he started playing guitar and kind of writing music when he was in high school, and he had a band in college and got a record deal after that. And
oh, nice.
So he's done that and now mostly writes and produces. But yeah, we're sort of split down the middle because my other brother is a pediatric oncologist.
Oh, wow. So he's the one in the family that everyone's like, thank you for making what we do feel meaningless.
Right. It's like, thank good you for being you.
The biggest hero of all time.
Right.
Yeah.
And he gets that honest from my mom because she was a physical therapist. And
sure.
So yeah, we have like this medical side of the family that's out there actually like saving lives and helping people. And then we have the three like creative like fuck offs, and
but
we're just
yeah
like,
at the same time all it takes is one person saying your music got me through the hardest time in my life for you to be like I am a doctor,
I know.
I'm a music doctor, like so you are that's so important. Can you imagine a life devoid of the arts, like a life where a doctor, I mean, that was the best feeling during COVID for me, was feeling like, and I'm sure again that goes back to us talking about the feeling of being on stage, you know, not having been able to do it, but having someone say, I'm a first responder and I just want to thank you for this thing that you did because it got me through that. I'm going to cry. But that's such a feeling of like, oh, God, I'm in the food chain. Like, I'm a contributing factor to the environment. Yeah. And it's easy to lose sight of that when you're focused on the immediate, the moment of trauma or the moment of an emergency, or the moment of like, what's saving lives in a physical, actual, literal, like palpable way versus this sort of nebulous, like the muses and like, you know, this and that.
Right.
And then you hear that and, you know, I'm sure your brother is the first person to say that, like, ugh, thank God we're not all pediatric oncologists. Like, thank God I can go home and watch a comedy and listen to music I like. And that's so important to your daily diet of being a human being, right?
Yeah, yeah. That was such an important thing for me to learn. I used to like really be at war with myself as stuff with Bird Talker, like started going really well, I felt a lot of guilt about it. And when we started making money and I was like, oh my God, my job is music. And this feels like crazy. And I feel like an idiot. And even like last year, like real moments of crisis like that, I think I really get this feeling of like, I don't know, just an awareness of how intangible the thing that I can offer is, you know, but I've really, I've been able to come to appreciate that. And, like you said, just hearing feedback from people that it really does matter. And then like when I turn it back on myself, it's like, I know without a doubt that music has gotten me through so much in my life. Like if I imagine a world without music, my whole body gets cold and I feel like I want to die. Like I know how important it is to me, but for some reason I couldn't take that and apply it to music that I made, you know.
I know we can never give ourselves the advice we give our friends.
Yeah.
Or at least we can't take our own advice.
I know. Like I was always the exception. Like, well, my music is.
Yeah, it's amazing how many what like gymnastics we do to make sure that we are excluded from the positivity of love. Absolutely. And like appreciation that we feel for everything else. It's like, oh no, I flip that switch quick when it comes to myself.
Right.
You know?
And you feel like, I feel like I'm being a good person when I do that, you know? Like it's better to be humble or whatever, but it's like that's just as narcissistic.
Right.
To believe that you're the only one that these things don't apply to. It's like,
for
sure. Shut the fuck up.
Oh my God. It's so great to release that. It's so great to be like, oh, I'm very much like everyone else in most of the ways. Right. Maybe I could be special in like these ways that each of us has our own special little like magic rocks inside us or whatever. But like, I can let go of the idea that I'm like spectacularly broken in this like amazingly unfixable way because no one could possibly, you know, it's like, nope.
Right.
I love it. I love saying to my therapist, would you mind telling me that this thought I'm having right now is like something you've heard before? You know, I like love that feeling.
Yeah.
I love that feeling. It's such a relief. And I didn't, I didn't always allow for that. I had to like, you know, you put those walls up. You really see what depression can do in terms of like that isolation, that very negative solipsistic isolation. That is like, oh no, you're getting none of the benefits of being self-absorbed and all of the trauma. Like there's nothing good happening here in any way. It's so hard. Yeah. And you want to like let people out and, you know, but I think honestly, again, that's art, right? I mean, that's that as much as therapy, like having that access. It's funny you were saying, talking about music and all of a sudden I flashed like my dad when I was little was a big Sean Colvin fan. And I remember one of her like songs that was on the radio all the time and stuff was, I guess it was, I Don't Know Why, I think it's called, but there's a very, she just goes super literal. And there's a part that says, you know, if there were no music, I would not get through. And at the time I remember thinking like, I mean, that's a little on the nose, Sean, but now I'm like, I mean,
yeah,
somebody had to say it.
I know, like she said it. Yeah,
it's true. You know,
yeah, it's like this sort of therapeutic relationship that we get to have. Because, like I was saying before, like there were feelings I didn't feelings that I heard echoed in music for the first time, or like lyrics that you know made me feel like. So I'm not the only one who feels that way, or I'm not the only one who thinks that. You know, so it's like. Those moments that you get with your therapist, it's like, I've had so many of those with music that I consume. And then other people have that with mine, that it's like, it really is this very vulnerable, like therapeutic space that we get into when we express things like that through whatever our creative medium is. But
absolutely,
it's just sort of, opening up and being like, I feel this, you too. And
then
like, yes. And we just relax.
It's the makes it the scariest and the most satisfying.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It's so scary to put yourself out in that particular way.
Yeah.
Especially like you said, coming from, you know, if you've been on the other side where you study lit, you know, you're aided by the fact that like, okay, clearly I'm like aware and appreciative of writing because I'm studying it and talking about it, but I'm also not producing it. So I don't that's such a different muscle of analyzing someone else's work versus being like, okay, now I'm going to, you know, guess I'll put my thing out there.
Right.
And I think that goes that's well.
Why I never did it is because it terrifies me still to this day every time I do it. So,
yeah.
But you just learn to love that feeling, I think, and love what is on the other side of it too.
Absolutely.
Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
I'm Lisa Hannawalt.
And I'm Emily Heller.
9 years ago, we started a podcast to try and learn something new every episode.
Things have gone a little off the rails since then. Tune in to hear about
low-stakes neighborhood drama,
gardening,
the sordid, nasty underbelly of the horse girl lifestyle,
hot sauce,
addiction to TV and sweaty takes on celebrity culture,
and the weirdest, grossest stuff you can find on Wikipedia.org.
We'll read all of it, no matter how gross. There's something for everyone on our podcast, Baby Geniuses.
Hosted by us, two horny adult idiots.
Hang out with us as we try and fail to retain any knowledge at all.
Every other week on Maximum Fun. Baby Geniuses, tell us something we don't know.
I want to get into this MASH game. Have you ever played MASH?
Mansion.
It stands for mansion, apartment, shack, and house, and it is something that is very much just like a weird, like, time-wasting wish fulfillment. Exactly.
Yes,
right. I like to end every episode with it, and I like to kind of lean into things that, you know, I don't want to give you like a category that would totally, you'd be like, I don't like that thing. Why would you ask me to pick three positives to this thing? So I'm going to try to lean into what I know about you.
Okay.
We'll start out with a what I think is a softball, just in the sense of, I hope that you're not like, oh, I can't even think of one. Might be tough because you might think of too many, but three musicians that you, and it can be that they have all, they're all deceased. It can be that it could still happen because they're alive and well. But three musicians that you would love to have collaborated with or to collaborate with.
Collabs. Wow. I'll speak from the present because this, I feel like who I'm connected to, it changes all the time. Right now, artists that make me feel very excited are Jacob Collier and her. And Nick Hakim or Sam Gindel. That's four. But
it's true that I stopped at Nick Hakim because I did run out of lines.
It's three, and that's the rules of the game, and we should stick to it.
It's a bitter pill that you have to swallow. Speaking of swallowing a bitter pill, three foods that in this reality perhaps you are allergic to or feels like it's not great for the environment on some level, or it's a thing that you had this one place, this one time, and you wish that you could have it all the time because it tasted so amazing. This is in this MASH universe we're creating, all ramifications go out the window. So if you want to eat, you know, an entire birthday cake, you will not feel sick. You will not get fat. You will not get diabetes. Like, this is total wish fulfillment. And it could also just be like, or it could be, you know, I know there's mercury in fish, so please give me mercury-free, you know, tuna whenever I want it at the snap of my fingers. So that's kind of what the, so three foods like that, that it's not that the only thing you're eating. It just means you could have those whenever you want it at the snap
three
of your fingers.
Magical
no ramifications. Exactly.
That I can eat all the time.
Exactly.
I can eat a whole tub of dried dates.
Mm.
And I do.
Without shitting
often.
Your pants. That's what would happen to me.
Yeah.
Because I love a date.
There's, yeah, no, that happens for sure. And we just sort of work it in and roll with it. But I love them so much.
Yeah.
That I eat a lot of those.
Wonderful.
Dolmas. I would just eat dolmas every day. Dolmas and dates. I guess I like live in the, I'm some sort of sultan.
There's some good Middle Eastern and absolutely Mediterranean food happening.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
Cause like
wonderful.
That and like avocado and then like oily fish. And walnut.
All day long.
Just like.
You've just named all the things.
Yeah. I just. Mm-hmm.
Should we throw avocado in here?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's do avocado.
In any form that you want it.
Yeah, I take it anyway.
Great. Great. Okay. Three movies that you can jump into and you're not reliving the plot. It's just a way to sort of be in that atmosphere, be in that world whenever you want with those characters, just kind of getting that feeling all over you of that movie that you love. Three.
Ooh, yeah. I grew up with the original Star Wars trilogy. So I always wanted to be there. So I would choose that one. I also grew up with the movie
Are
Willow.
You telling me that you think you just picked three movies in one?
That was my answer.
Oh, that is very sneaky. I'm gonna let it go.
I do have another one though. Did you ever watch the movie Willow?
Yeah.
With Val Kilmer.
So good.
I used to love that movie and it was so weird.
I mean, I'm not sure it's good, but it's so good. You know
it's
what I mean?
It's not good, but I loved it. I loved it.
Yeah.
So that would be another
I support that very much.
Yeah. And then maybe Muppet Treasure Island. That was another favorite. Lots of adventure, but like no real danger, right?
I'm so proud to say that my friend directed Muppet Treasure Island.
Are
so
you serious?
If you ever want to meet the wonderful Kirk Thatcher, he's the best. And I absolutely am going to email him and say, my new friend Danny totally picked, like...
She loves your
movie. She loves the Mupp Treasure Isle. Never called it that, never will again.
I will call it that forever.
With that in mind, I feel like I'm seeing a lot of, like, Henson Company touchings on these things that you've picked. There's some Henson Company happening in Star Wars trilogy, obviously. Mm-hmm. Willow, I don't know. I can't remember if that's Henson, but I feel like there could have been like a puppet here or there.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Give me three non-human characters that for some reason you get to interact with. So it could be like Clifford the Big Red Dog, Kermit and Snuffy, or, you know, whatever. But three fictitious, inhuman creatures you get to hang with.
Okay, let's go with choice number one is Totoro from My Neighbor Totoro.
Oh my God, absolutely.
I'd go take a nap on his belly.
Absolutely.
Who else? I loved Winnie the Pooh when I was a kid.
Oh, sure.
I'd chill with Winnie for an afternoon. You know, because I just saw a video today of a TikTok from The Mandalorian, I'll say Baby Yoda. I'd like to snuggle Baby Yoda.
I guess I'll say...
And protect him.
Grogu.
And take him from place to place. That's his name, yeah.
Grogu. That shocked everyone. It's like, yeah. Really?
Really?
Okay. Grogu. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, three places in the world that we're going to give you the opportunity to have a second home. Doesn't have to be a vacation home. Could be busy working career home. But second home, someplace in the world, even if you've never been there, and we're going to sort of be able to teleport you there. So you don't have to think about like, oh, I would love to have a second home in New Zealand, but it takes so long. No, we're getting rid of the travel.
I'm just there. Let's go. I just went to Kauai this year. I'd like to have a house there that I could hop over to whenever. Maybe one in like France, French countryside. And then, you know, a little hut in Thailand. On a beach somewhere.
Wonderful. Okay. All due respect to Zach. You can handle this however you want to, but MASH games do have a component of romance, sexy times, companionship, however you want to think of it. Three people, I don't care if they're cartoons, animals, humans from 100 years ago, a character that Brad Pitt played once in something, so you're not even picking Brad Pitt. Whatever you want. Three alternate universe, sexy times, romance, or just like, you know, companionship.
Good Lord. Well, we'll start with Val Kilmer from Willow. and we'll go with Justin Timberlake.
From
the early days.
Yeah, great.
Bleached hair. I love Dev Patel. I'd like for him to hug me, wrap me up.
Oh my God. Have you seen the David Copperfield that he just did?
I think I watched half of it. I tend to do that.
Oh, yeah, you watched
it. I went back and watched the end, but yeah, I have seen some of it.
I love that one. It's so strange. I mean, it kind of has that Terry Gilliam quality where it's just like the magical realism sort of kooky, but I loved it. I also thought it was a great soundtrack, if memory serves. Okay, two final categories. Let's do alternate universe career. So just something else that you get to try your hand at in this alternate universe.
Okay. A pilot. I'm a pilot somewhere.
Wonderful.
I fly. Somewhere else, I am maybe I'm an architect.
Great.
I know how to design and build things. And then in another one, I'm the Sultan in the desert, maybe, and I have no job.
Great.
And I eat dates and dolmas all day long.
That's the number one. The number one reason is still fairly simplistic in a very charming way.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Yep. And then final one, let's do three skills that maybe you have or maybe you don't have at all that we can sort of either enhance for you overnight or just give you a whole new skill that you heretofore have not had.
Yeah. I would like to, I've been over here wailing on this drum set today and I am not a drummer. Uh-huh. I would like to be able to play every instrument.
Great.
Just play everything.
Yes.
Speak every language, maybe.
Sure. Absolutely.
Multilingual.
Yeah.
And maybe I understand like coding and computers and stuff because I don't at all. And I think it would help me if I did.
I agree. I feel I think I would pick all of these. I would happily pick all three of the same exact skills that you picked.
So yeah, that'd be fun. Big that'd thumbs be up really for me. Fun. Cool.
Pick a number between 1 and 7.
7.
Okay. While I do these extremely important scientific calculations in which I come up with a result of your 100% guaranteed alternate universe mash life.
Wow, cool.
Would you mind telling people about where they should be listening to your music? And anything else that you would like for people to be keeping track of and investing in with your wonderful gifts and talents?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can listen to our music on any streaming platform. Our name is Bird Talker, and you can find us on social media at Bird Talker Music. And we're on Instagram, the Twitter, the Facebook. We just finished up a nationwide tour. We have one more show if anybody's in the Nashville area on Tuesday, the 14th in Nashville at the Mercy Lounge, which is closing down. So we're all really excited to get to play there one more time. So that'll be a special one.
Why is it closing?
I don't know.
It's not like there's no sign on the thing that's like, guys, we couldn't do it anymore because.
Can't make rent. Yeah. Right. No, I don't know the story, but. Going away. And just follow us on socials. Our website's birdtalkermusic.com, and we're going to announce some more tour dates next year. We just released our second album in October, so that's out and available to stream. And yeah, we're just going to get back in the studio and make more music next year.
Love it.
So,
love it. I love that. I do have your results.
Okay.
I have your test results.
Okay.
First of all, I'm excited about your next tour because on your next tour, I want you to rest assured that you could travel the globe and you would be able to have a conversation with every single fan because you do speak all languages.
I do.
Not bad. Yeah.
That's a dream.
And that's such, I mean, talk about a relationship to a culture through its language. Like the world that cracks open for you everywhere you go is like this sort of like profound understanding of a culture through being able to speak all of these languages. So that's a huge win, in my opinion. Huge win. Also, master key. Also helpful for you as a pilot because you can feel empowered to, you're not going to have to like point to any emojis. If your plane is having some problems, if you have to like land in a place you've never been before, you're going to be able to have a
whole
conversation.
Fly anywhere and talk to whoever's around.
Yeah. Talk about freeing.
Yeah.
Some of that involves, I mean, listen, you can teleport there or you can fly there. We know you can fly there yourself, but you certainly do also have a beautiful, now slightly confusing, but you do of mansion, apartment, shack and house. You did get an apartment, but it's in the French countryside. So I guess... I guess it's like maybe a small, it's a smaller, one of the smaller towns, like near the Loire River, where it's still like, there may still be like a quadruplex, you know, and then the bakery's next door. And so it's an apartment, but it's a beautiful apartment in the French countryside.
I'll take it.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Also, just unlimited, a lot of great cooking can happen in that region. Rest assured, you will never want for an avocado, whether or not you're eating it simply or it's being incorporated into some cuisine. Endless avocado supply with zero ramifications. Ooh. I am very excited to hear your collaboration with Jacob Collier.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be yield some very, very cool stuff.
God, who knows?
Yeah. I don't know. Listen, you're going to be able to engage with this creature. I'm not sure it's going to yield a full collaboration, but I want you to know that Grogu is. Grogu's in the picture. Grogu's in the picture.
He is.
And I'll tell you what you could do. I'll tell you this. I feel like if you took Grogu into Willow with you, because you can jump into Willow whenever you want and be in that world, I think you would appreciate that. He might eat stuff he's not supposed to because he sends, I guess he tends to do that. But you can go into Willow.
Some trouble.
Yeah. With or without Grogu, you can go into Willow whenever you want as a sort of palate cleanser.
It's pretty overwhelming, but keep going. It's a lot.
I know. I know. I'm glad you're sitting down.
Ooh, me too.
And that just leaves us with this person that you're sharing all of these many adventures with. And I have to tell you that it is Dev Patel.
It is.
And he's a total dreamboat.
So I thought it would be.
I think you've done extremely well.
I think so, too.
And listen, if you need to have like a some sort of one night stand with Val Kilmer while you're in Willow, that's also on the table.
He with the long
still,
hair.
He's still a part of it.
And the flowy open shirt. Just like the guy in the dance. What is it? River Dance.
Oh, sure. River Dance or like on any romance novel circa like 1990.
That shit got me too because that guy, he could dance, you know?
Yeah, he could dance.
It really did it for me.
Oh, I love it. Open Those shirt. Open yeah. Shirts. Flowing flowing hair, open Ooh. Shirt. Watch out, everybody.
Yeah.
Watch out.
Throw on your clogs and call it a day.
Love it. This has been so much fun. What a pleasure. Thank you so much for sitting down with me post-tour. Everyone, please listen to Bird Talker. Do yourself a major favor and get wrapped up in their music. And I love the whole conversation we had around it. I feel like that's a nice thing to carry with you. If you're not familiar with a band, you can carry all the stuff that you now know into this conversation, into your conversation with the music. And I'm excited. I think we've built some new fans here today.
I think we did. Thank you so much for having me.
The show is produced by Julian Burrell and Christian Duenas.
And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi. Hey, remember
when we could say... MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.